Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my hat and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 171. I am your host, John Senecal, along with co-host this week, Matt Sorois, usually behind the mic or behind the booth. I guess not much on camera, but Brian's off doing... What's Brian doing?
Brian things.
I know he had a remote broadcast this morning, so he's probably getting into a food coma right now. But
yeah, probably.
Starting his weekend early, so he won't be joining us this morning, but Matt will definitely be able to fill in, especially when we start talking about the Yankees-Royals series that's coming up. But first, let's start off with a little recap of the first round of, we'll call it the wild card series. If you weren't a fan of baseball and you thought baseball was boring, you're not human, because this first round was insane.
It's the magic of October.
Unbelievable. I mean, like, as Yankee fans and baseball fans in general, I think we are both excited that the Astros are out.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though we did the stupid thing and all picked those cheaters to win, you know, not knowing that they're cheating anymore, but they probably had the better team on paper, and they were the perennial ALCS contenders, and they were always there.
Playing,
so we picked them.
Playing in Houston too. I mean, that's a huge advantage for them.
Huge advantage. And the interesting thing about this first round is, you know, no travel in the first round. So all the games were in the higher seeded team's building. But that being said, the Tigers went in and took care of business, which is awesome. But I think the important game to focus on, series to focus on in the first round was the Mets and the Brewers. Unbelievable. I mean, this is flashing back to the Miracle Mets of 69, in my opinion.
I mean, that game three was, I mean, it looked like it was going to be completely over. Like, the Mets had nothing for eight full innings.
Yeah, basically nothing.
They couldn't do anything for eight full innings.
And you just get two home runs hit against you, back-to-back home runs you give up.
Back-to-back pitches.
Back-to-back pitches, like, and one of them, Sal Frelick, has hit two home runs all season. All season. So the wind is out of the sails with the Mets going into the ninth inning. But, you know, I look at the ninth inning, and obviously there's the polar bear, but you take Francisco Lindor's at bat.
Huge at bat.
He works a walk, changes the whole complexity of the game, you know. He knew that they were not going to throw him a strike at all. So he waited it out. He did what a veteran and a leader does. And he said to himself, you can't hit a two-run home run with nobody on base, right?
Exactly.
So he needs to get on base. And that's what he did. And to me, I point to that as being the pivotal moment in that inning. Right?
It was massive. Yeah, absolutely massive. And then especially, Vanto struck out. And then Brandon Nimmo comes up. And not only does he get a base hit, but he gets a base hit to right to... essentially it doesn't matter anyway, but like advancing him over to third was big. And then of course, Bear comes up.
You can say what you want about that. Lindor getting the third on that play, not being significant, but it is, because yes, the double play is still in order. But it doesn't matter, 'cause it was two outs, I believe, right? No, there was one out.
There was only one out.
But that changes the complexity of your pitches, because you have a runner on third base. You got to be more careful. You can't throw a bunch of breaking pitches. You got to be more selective with your pitches that you know you're getting over. But for Pete Alonso to come up. Now, Pete Alonso has been slumping. We all know that. I don't think he's hit a home run since in like almost a month, close to it, since like September 10th or something like that. Not having Pete Alonso year in his walk year. Normally, you're accustomed to 40-something home runs. I think he was low 30s this year. But man, what a huge at-bat.
Absolutely massive.
And again, worked the count to his favor, got into a count where he could handle a pitch at 3-1. Unbelievable. And my favorite part about that hit is, I mean, I love Pete Alonso. I'm a huge Polar Bear fan. But he was like the only one in that park that knew that ball was going out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everyone else was like, maybe it's not going out. Maybe. And it did just,
it was close.
But it's amazing how these MLB players, even when a ball just sneaks over, they know. They know.
Yeah. There's just it must be like the way it feels coming off the bat or something. Just batting practice, maybe hit one in batting practice just like that or something. But you're right though. The way he took strike one on the first pitch, and then you know those three next pitches weren't like that far off from the strike zone.
And Williams kept coming back with a changeup, kept coming back with changeups, kept coming back
just
with changeups.
Waited it out.
And he waited. He waited on that changeup. And you know, Devin Williams is an excellent reliever. He's probably, other than Emmanuel Clase, he was probably the best reliever left in the playoffs. And for him to get beat is huge. It's a huge momentum, regardless of the win. It's a huge momentum the way the Mets came back and won. And they've been doing it. And there's something special about this team. You can all the naysayers can say what they want. When a team believes and then they produce and they believe at the same time, they're dangerous. Yeah. They're a very dangerous team.
And clearly they're never out of a game. They did to the Braves on that doubleheader.
Unbelievable.
To clinch a wild card spot. It was basically the same thing that they did here, that they just kept fighting back and never saying die and just getting the job done in the end.
And it's crazy because, you know, I think going into this offseason, there probably were a lot of Mets fans, even going into yesterday's game, that would say, let him walk. Let Pete Alonso go, right? Like, what have you done for us lately? Let's forget about the 50 home runs and the 40 home runs and all that stuff. Let's just look at what he's done in 2024, which wasn't typical Alonso. But I'd be willing to bet that after Thursday night's game, that Pete Alonso is going to be very well wanted come 2025 in New York. And let's be honest. Francisco Lindor is the star on that team. He is the superstar with a big contract. But, you know, I'll say the heartbeat. The heartbeat of that team is Pete Alonso. He's been there the longest. He's the polar bear. He's the lovable figure that can still go out there and growl.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I kind of like, you know, like a Paul Konerko type, you know, when he was on the Chicago White Sox. Like, he's just that
Jim Thome.
Yeah, like, he's just that guy.
You can't say anything bad about him, and he's always got a smile on his face. And he just had dropped a pop fly that, you know, he looked like a little leaguer lost on that. And, you know, the ability for these major league players to just wipe out the last play and focus on the next at bat and just blank that out of their head is... It's an amazing quality. It's unbelievable. And the ones that thrive and the ones that stay in the major leagues are the ones that have it. You have to have that to do it. It's amazing. It is unbelievable. The Mets are rolling. Interesting fact, you know, the Mets are going to play the Phillies, and the Mets and the Phillies have never met each other in the postseason.
Really?
It's crazy, right?
Wow.
Unbelievable. When you think about, you know, the history of the postseason, usually you had to win the league, right?
Right.
And then since the wild card era, it just has never matched up where they faced off. And that's
interesting.
That's going to be interesting. And you know, they're huge rivalries, obviously huge rivals.
See like a brawl or two happening in this 5-game series.
It should be a very interesting series. But that being said, let's, you know, now that we've talked about what we thought were the most interesting parts of the wild card series, let's look ahead to the division series. Now we're down to 8 teams, 4 in each league. And, you know, it's crazy. Let's talk about the National League first, then we'll roll into the American League. And I think the National League is kind of predictive of what everyone thought, but obviously the Mets are throwing a wrench into the works here. So the Mets are going to face off with the Phillies for the first time in playoff history. I mean, I think the Phillies are the powerhouse, them the Padres in the NL right now. Mets got a tall order. They got a tall order. But if you're the Phillies and you're sitting there and you see this coming, what are you thinking?
you got to be a little bit weary, I would say, because, I mean, nobody's really playing hotter. Maybe the Padres, But yeah, nobody's really playing hotter than, or maybe the Tigers too on American League side. But yeah, I mean, these guys, like I said, they're just never say die attitude, and they're always in a game, whether it be down four runs in the eighth or, you know, two runs down in the ninth. It's pretty impressive what they're doing. And yeah, the Phillies got to be on their heels a little bit.
Yeah, the Phillies on paper are obviously the better team. They have the better pitching, they have the superstars, and they have the recent postseason experience. And, you know, a lot of people would say that is important, and it is important. But what's also important is having the belief,
yeah,
the momentum, and the star power. And, you know, huge, huge sigh of relief for Mets fans with Francisco Lindor's back leading into the playoffs. And obviously, I don't think that's bothering him. If it is, you wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm the Phillies, I'm nervous. I'm really nervous.
Especially if the Mets go in there and ride this hot streak and take game one,
yeah,
in Philadelphia. That's going to be a big problem for the Phillies and their fans.
And this home field advantage, you know, yes, you will have three games in your, if needed, in your home stadium, but it's not as big a deal anymore,
right,
because
no,
you do have to go on the
right
road, and you are going to have to play at least one game in the other person's park. So TBD on that. We will get to our picks in a little bit towards the end. Let's look at the other NL matchup, and it's the one I think everyone saw coming. It was the Dodgers and the Padres, right? And everybody, I think, loves the Dodgers as far as the star power, right? Like, they have
all
they got all the names. But if you follow baseball and you watch baseball, you would know that the Dodgers aren't all that. Their pitching isn't all that. They've been depleted with injuries. They've been, you know, skirting by on Shohei and then a second half of Mookie, really,
yeah,
and a piece together pitching rotation. Freddie Freeman has an injured ankle going in. You know, you don't know what you're going to get out of your starters. Jack Flaherty, you know, he was great, but he was a Tiger. Yamamoto will start game one, and you don't know what you're going to get out of him because he's been hurt most of the season. I really don't see the Dodgers putting up as much a fight as everyone thinks they're going to in this series.
I completely agree with you. I really honestly completely agree with you. As much as, you know, the shine of the Dodgers is like the sweet story of the season and Shohei's 50-50 season, like you said, that they haven't been as impressive as advertised. And, man, I would love nothing more than to see the Padres going to LA and beat them in the first two games.
And I think, you know, I think the way the regular season ended for the Padres, having a chance to go into the Dodger Stadium and basically take the West from them, and that,
yeah,
didn't happen. So I do think that the Padres are going to be a little extra in the tank against them. I believe it's Dylan Cease against Yamamoto in game,
yep,
one. Flaherty will pitch game two for the Dodgers. You know, I think the pitching is better for the Padres, obviously. I think the star power is about the same. The Padres have got some great,
yeah,
players. They got some awesome players. Of course, the rookie Jackson Merrill, that everybody, you know, anytime you got that one rookie on your team that's gonna chance to win rookie of the year, he's performed. Like, he has not stopped,
yeah,
either. He has not stopped.
It seems like he's put a charge into the rest of the team, too, especially later.
Yeah,
on.
The Padres are a fun team to watch, and it's really amazing that they're in the situation they are after trading one of the best players in baseball, that being Juan Soto, to the Yankees. That being said, let's look at the American League. Now, the American League has another interesting angle, too, because three and AL Central teams, which nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw that coming. If anybody thought that the Indians,
I think it was skewed by the White Sox, maybe. There were people like, AL Central, no way.
Right. Yeah, and it's crazy that you get three teams out of there making it into this round, and then you have another team that set a record for games lost in a,
yeah,
season. Like, statistically the worst team ever in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Right? And then the three other teams in that division are in the second round of the playoffs. Another interesting angle, the Tigers and the Guardians, in that, even going back to the Indians days, haven't met in the playoffs.
Wow.
So again, you know, the old school of, you know, got to win your division.
Yeah.
So we're now looking at two matchups in the playoffs where teams have never faced each other in a playoff. So that puts a little bit more on the line. So that being said, I mean, can you get super excited about the Indians? I mean, the Indians, the Guardians and the Tigers?
They're there.
They're,
you're
there.
A fan of baseball, you'll watch it.
They're not packed with stars. I see this being a huge bullpen series.
Yeah.
I don't see this being where you guys are out there throwing seven innings. After I think game one, everybody's TBD on both sides.
Mm.
So you know, if you're the television execs and you're sitting there looking at your spreadsheets, you're sitting here, oh my God, are we going to make any money on this? You know,
let's be honest, that's probably why they're playing at 1 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah. So it's probably the least marquee matchup of all the matchups in the postseason. But that being said, I mean, I think it could be one of the most exciting ones because I think these teams match up very well.
They're very evenly matched. And I will say, AJ Hinch, as much as Yankee fans have to hate him and love to hate him, he's done an unbelievable job with the Detroit Tigers and this young team, especially managing the bullpen that he has. Because you saw it in the last series with the Orioles too. Because he's like, everybody's available.
Everybody's
available at any time. Like,
the mentality you need in the postseason. Yeah. And hopefully that's the mentality that the Yankees carry into the postseason. Because you saw it with the Mets and Diaz on Thursday night. They brought him in the seventh inning. You know, they knew they might not be a ninth inning. They needed to hold the game where it was. All right, so, you know, not the marquee matchup, the Guardians and the Tigers. But again, the Tigers, you know, they got that extra sauce. They got that believe. They got that we can beat anybody. We can come back. We can do it because they've been doing it.
And there's no superstar on that team. Like, there's a lot of good players, but there's no superstar on that team. All just have that belief that everybody's going to show up on that night and put together a good game.
And that's dangerous. And they got, you know, they got better when Baez Almago went down. That's basically when their season switched. And Tracy Sweeney came up to play shortstop.
It's like really like when they walked off the Yankees in that Little League game.
In the Little League game,
everything turned around for them, which is.
And again, they have the probably the Cy Young Award winner in the AL, and you know the way these postseason matchups go, you know, you do have off days, so there is opportunities based on the off days that if you start game one and game two, you could come back. Game five on regular rest or game five on short rest. So we all know in the postseason. Unless you're injured, you're going to be available to pitch, and that's how the mentality
arms
should be.
Falling off,
and that's how it should be. That's exactly how it should be. And so, you know, TBD on that. But I believe that could be a very exciting series. Now, let's get to the series that we want to talk about, obviously, and that's the Yankees and the Royals. And for us older folks, as I approach 50, I mean, I don't remember it because I was too young. But these were the perennial huge matchups in the 70s. They met three times in the 70s. And ironically, the Yankees won all of them. They won all of the play. That's back when it was just the ALCS. Mm-hmm. And they won them all three series at a score of 3-1. That's when they did 3 out of 5. Series. It wasn't 4 out of 7 back then in the 70s. So the Yankees have won all of these series against the Royals. But it's a different time. There wasn't Bobby Witt Jr. back then. But is Bobby Witt Jr. going to be able to carry this team? Because they did not score runs against the Orioles. It wasn't like they blew them out of the water.
No. It's insane. Like, I mean, I said it to you and Brian too. Like, it's crazy how they held the Orioles to one run and they only scored 3 over 18 innings.
Yeah.
And won the series. Like, it's absolutely.
And we
insane.
Know that you're not going to beat the Yankees scoring 3 runs over a series.
No.
It's just not going to happen because Aaron Judge and Soto alone will beat you.
Right.
Now, the Yankees have, if you're looking out and looking towards the future, the Yankees have a 13-6 record against all the remaining teams in the AL, which are all AL Central teams, which bodes well, right? But you got to win the games in front of you. So the Yankees are going to be going into game one with Garrett Cole against Michael Wacha. So no Cole Reagans, but you'll see Cole Reagans in game two, which means you could see him again in game five. I think, you know, the Yankees are the clear favorite. I do believe the Yankees should win. But that being said, you always get nervous about how your pitching is going to perform.
Yes.
And who's exactly. coming in after that. If there's problems by the third inning, second inning, first inning, you know, it can happen, right? Who is going to right that ship? Who is going to give you that stability? Who is going to get you through the rest of the game? Now, as it looks now, it looks like it's Cole, Rodon, and then Heel for game three, with Schmidt being the guy that's going to kind of pencil in maybe in game three if they don't use him in long relief in one and two based on the matchup. But Schmidt looks like to be the odd man out right now, at least for the first three games, which is fine for me, I think, because Schmidt's is a very viable option to be coming out of the bullpen.
Right.
If you
I
need
agree,
it.
Yep.
I know you're probably super nervous about the first base situation as I am.
That's the big question mark. That is the big question mark, because if Anthony Rizzo's fingers can't
go. I think he's out for this series.
Yeah.
I believe he's out for this series, which means you have one or two choices. And you have Oswaldo Cabrera, who you and I have been beating the drum all season why this guy hasn't been playing.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. You like a guy with versatility coming off the bench. You can play anywhere, blah, 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 blah. But that being said, it's the postseason. You need to win. Now, do you put Ben Rice in at first base as a left-handed batter, knowing that most likely there is going to be a time very quickly within the first five innings that you might want to substitute him out based on a matchup pitching? Do you start him at first base?
It's so tough. It's so tough to say. Unfortunately, I'd have to say yes, but I don't like it. I don't like it one single bit, to be honest with you.
Now, when you say yes, is it yes because the power aspect? Because we haven't seen enough sample of him to label him a great defender. We
right.
haven't seen enough sample of him to know that he's going to come through with a double in the left center field gap when he needs it. I mean, to me, he's basically a dialed down Kevin Moss. You know, he's a guy that came up, hit three big home runs in one game, and that's pretty much all he did for the Yankees, in my opinion.
The shine wore off pretty quickly.
The shine wore off really quickly for him, which makes me super nervous that you're going to take a guy like that, who clearly couldn't handle it the first time around, and put him in a position where he needs to handle it.
Yeah.
Not only at the plate, but in the field. Anthony Rizzo's shoes at first base are not easy shoes to fill.
No.
My opinion is you go with Oswaldo Cabrera because just for the pure fact that he's a switch hitter. You kill all the matchups, and if there is a point in the game where you feel that he wouldn't be able to handle somebody and you need that left-handed bat, maybe you bring in him Rice to pinch hit for him.
Mm.
But you also have Rice in other situations where maybe you use him to pinch hit for Volpe or something. But you know, I just don't see a ton of spots where you're going to need a left-handed bat coming off the bench
right.
to pinch hit for someone. You're not going to pinch hit for Gleyber. Right?
No. Yeah,
you're not pinch hitting for Judge.
No.
Soto's a lefty. Wells, you're not pinch hitting for as a lefty, unless it's a lefty batter. You're not pinching any lefty for a lefty. So I'm looking down that lineup and I'm thinking, do you even need Ben Rice on your roster?
Yeah, maybe not. And I'll just put it that way. maybe not. I mean, my big worry is, you know, obviously Oswaldo's defense at first.
Right.
And that's the big question mark. And you know, Rizzo's so good at first.
You're not going
to
fill that void. You just won't. DJ ain't going to fill it. Nobody's going to fill it at this stage.
That's my worry, too, is that, you know, Jazz Chisholm, if he's playing third, hasn't been.
He spikes one late. Exactly.
And then
you know how baseball is. It will happen.
Yeah.
It will happen.
I'm just thinking, like, Jazz Chisholm's going to pick one up and then throw one in the dirt. Oswaldo's not going to be able to scoop it, or, you know, vice versa. It's tough because as much as the Yankees could score, their defense could be potentially a problem.
Yeah, so that is something I think that every Yankee fan and every pundit out there is going to be hyper-focused on. And we'll see. I mean, it's actually kind of interesting because it's pulling the focus off of Verdugo and Dominguez, which I think would have been the huge focus going into this,
right.
Which I don't think would bode well for that scenario, I'll say, as I put up my quotation marks, because it's been broiling literally ever since like 2 months, pretty much. It's been like before he even came up, it was broiling. Dominguez, that is. So hopefully that takes a little bit of focus off of that, but that's still going to be there because both those guys are going to be on the roster. We know that.
Yeah.
But who's going to start? You know, that's the question. Who's going to start? So again, like TBD on that. You know, I'm not Aaron Boone or Brian Cashman, but I'm going with, I love switch hitting. Players. I love switching players because I hate matchups. I hate seeing a guy being thought about being pulled in the fourth inning because of a matchup and then it comes back to bite you in the butt later in the game when you could have used him. And by having switch hitters, you just destroy that matchup stuff. It's great. And I think that's the way the Yankees need to go, but we'll see how they what they pull. All right. So let's talk predictions, all right? We've run through like kind of what we think, but we haven't talked about predictions. So Brian has been kind enough to text us in his predictions. Why don't we, since we're in the AL right now and we're talking about the AL, let's start in the AL. And let's start with who we're talking about. We're talking about the Yankees and the Royals, five game series. What do you got and why?
I'll take the Yankees in four. I just think that the offense is going to come alive and they're going to end up being too much for the Royals pitching and the Royals to handle. I obviously worry about the defense and worry about the bullpen a little bit, but I think as it looks right now that the Yankees are going to overpower the Royals.
And you say in four, do the Royals win one in New York or no?
No, I don't think they do.
No, they go home down with a chance to lose and come back and prolong. All right, that's interesting. That's interesting. I think that's not crazy. I think that's very solid. So I'm going to go with the same thing. Based on history, the Yankees have always beat them 3-1 in the playoffs, and I'm going to say they're going to do it again. And I do think the same thing. I think the Yankees will take two at home, and then the Royals will win one on the road. And the same reasons, you know, a little bit of nervousness about the defense. I'm not so freaked out about the bullpen anymore because, you know, Clay Holmes has been off and on. He's still that kind of once every six innings, six appearance guy. But I feel like if there's any doubt, they'll work around him and they won't use him. From what I'm reading, Mark Leiter Jr. isn't going to be on the roster for the first round.
It's probably a good decision to make.
Probably a good decision. Now Brian tends to agree with us. He said he wants New York in 4-2. He didn't give us an explanation, but I would think it's pretty much probably on par with what we said. They're on paper, they're the better team. I think, you know, throughout the season, I think the Yankees have also proven that they could beat them. Okay, so Tigers, Guardians. This one, I think, like we said, is a little bit more complex.
It is. Yeah, it definitely is, because the Guardians have been pretty solid all season long. The pitching has been on point. You know, J-Ram's always good. And for some reason, though, I think that the Tigers are just playing hot baseball right now, and I think they're going to steamroll the Guardians.
Yeah, these two teams are probably, like we said, the least interesting on paper. There's not a huge superstar presence on either team. You know, J-Ram is probably your least assuming superstar in Major League Baseball. Yeah. So, you know, you don't even really talk about him in the same voices as the Sotos and the Tatises and the Judges and all those guys. I do believe that the Tigers will win, and the same reason, based on the mojo, you know, what they got going. They have to play in Cleveland, so obviously they don't have the home field advantage. I think this will go five. I think this goes the full distance, and I think it's a flip-flop back and forth. 1-1, then 1-1, and then the Tigers have to go back into Cleveland and win it, which will be tough.
I'm going to go a little bit bold. I'm going to say the Tigers are going to sweep.
You think the Tigers are going to go right in there and sweep?
I think the time off is going to hurt the Guardians, and I think the Tigers just playing hot baseball, like I said, and I think they're going to match up well against them.
I mean, that's one thing we haven't even mentioned in this whole conversation yet, is the time off, and that has historically came back to bite teams in the butt in the last 3 or 4 years, and the MLB is still trying to figure out how to work it, and I just don't know if there's a way to do it. But yes, I do worry about the 5 days, 6 days off for the Yankees and the teams that are in it, especially the Yankees, because that's who we root for, obviously, you and I, and talk about a lot on this show. All right, so we have, and then Brian, let's talk about what Brian said. Brian said he wants Detroit in 4. So we're looking at the Tigers, right? All of us are saying the Tigers are going to win. You got them sweeping. Brian's got them in 4, and I got them in 5. So a little bit of disparity there, but we're all on the same page as far as who's going to the ALCS against the Yankees. All right, let's switch over to the NL. Now we have the marquee matchup as far as, you know, baseball, you know, fighting and in the parking lot and all that good stuff. It's not quite the Dodgers and the Giants, but boy, have the Dodgers and the Padres got a good rivalry in the last 5 or 6 years and Major League Baseball, and it's going to be something. What do you think? Who do you got?
I'm going to take the Padres in 5. I think it's going to go 5, and I think the fifth game, Tatis is going to get the big hit and drive him towards the NLCS.
How about that home run that he hit? I mean, it looked like it was like a 60-degree launch angle.
He is special, man.
I wish that guy didn't get pinched for the ringworm, man.
Yeah.
What an idiot. Boy, he would just be tiptoeing his way towards the Hall of Fame. What an awesome player and so fun to watch.
Yeah, he is.
So fun to watch. Well, maybe it'll be long enough that it'll just kind of blow out of everyone's mind after, you know. It's only ringworm.
Whatever. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Okay, so that being said, I think I'm going to go bold prediction here. I am not a huge Dodgers fan. I think they've been playing way over their ceiling all year. They've been relying so much on the Mookie and the Shohei show. And I'm Shohei'd out. I'm just Shohei'd out. I mean, I like his dog more than him at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go bold here, and I'm going to say that the Pods sweep them.
Nothing would make me happier.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, it'd be perfect bliss. The Astros are out and the Dodgers get swept. That'd be great for the baseball gods. So that Brian has got the Padres in five. So same thing. You got Padres in five. Brian's got Padres in five, and I got the Padres sweeping them in three. So I'm going bold prediction on this round. Okay, so the I'll say this is probably the bigger matchup because this is rabid fans. We're talking we're talking about crazy town here. We're not talking about a far distance to travel. So you could see a lot of both fans in the park. And that you know that was the same case. I guess real quick on a side note, I read that the Dodgers are trying to keep Padres fans out somehow.
Really?
Like they're trying to sell tickets. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're trying not to get a lot of fans, Padres fans, because that's even closer. I think it's like an hour away, so they can
travel
and make it crazy. So back to the NL East, we'll call it, because that's an NL East matchup, but the NL Division Series. I'll start this one. It's hard for me to go against the Phillies because I have the emotional attachment with Bobby Dickerson being a bench coach there. And I do think they're the better team. And I would think I would love to see the Phillies go to the World Series. But I'm telling you, man, the Mets are going to be tough to beat. I really do. I don't see the mojo ending at this point. I just don't. I'm going to say Mets in five. The OMG magic keeps going. Mets in five. What do you got?
I'm going the other way. As much as I would love to see the Mets win, I think the Phillies are just going to overpower them and take it in five.
But it's going to go five.
Yeah, I think so.
That's interesting. I mean, I think I don't see this series being a sweep. I don't either.
Not either.
They're just too much of a high emotional roller coaster for the Mets right now to have that thing jump off the tracks. Brian's got let's see. He's got the Mets in four. So he thinks that the Phillies will win one game. All right. You know, it's not too far off from what we got, but it's still a bold prediction.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to see how the sentiment of the Mets keeps swinging. It keeps swinging to being, you know, people are starting to believe in the Mets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I think the Mets have believed in themselves ever since the so-called meeting in May.
I'm taking the Phillies, though, John, because as soon as people start believing in the Mets, they let them down.
They let them down, and the Phillies swoop in and grab the NL division.
Crush everybody's dreams.
Yeah. Okay, so we have our predictions made, and only time will tell. Only time will tell. I am so excited for this. I love baseball.
I am too.
I love baseball, and it's going to be a great postseason to keep going. You know, really, as far as marquee matchups, you know, everybody obviously is looking at the AL and they want the Yankees, you know, the bean counters want the Yankees to come out.
Oh, yeah.
Because after whoever they match up after that is good. I mean, the Padres will be a little bit lower, but man, if they match up with the Dodgers, Phillies, or Mets, man, can you imagine another Subway Series?
Oh,
it'd be crazy.
That'd be madness, absolute madness. But I mean, as a Yankee fan, seeing the Orioles and the Astros get knocked out, how can you not be even more excited?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Yankees across the board are like, you know, regardless if you're a hater or not, are probably the not perennial, but the favorites to come out of the AL right now, based on history and based on the power of the team. You're listening to Fan Base, a deep dive in the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 171. Matt Sorois and John Senecal here. Real quick, let's talk about something big news in baseball that kind of got overshadowed by last night. I think it shocked a ton of people. Terry Francona is coming back to manage. I don't think anybody saw this coming.
No.
Nobody saw this coming.
Other people just pushed aside that he was never going to come back again. I mean, his health wasn't great.
Right.
I mean, he was going through a bunch of health issues.
Yep.
So I just think that they were just waiting for the day he was going to get inducted and you know,
put that on hold, right?
Yeah.
You know, and everybody knows, you know, what he did for Boston. I mean, he was a great manager for Boston, kind of got run out of town a little bit there, and went on to have a great run with Cleveland, a great run. And I mean, yes, you know, he talked about his health, and I mean, he became a figment of everyone's just memory. He was gone.
Yeah.
And then I was completely shocked to read that. And, you know, and then people start talking, well, you know, I think a lot of people have been looking different as far as, you know, like, what would the Cardinals do? And why would they, you know, would they fire their manager and the Marlins and this and that? And what about him going to, you know, these big market teams? And I don't think he wants a big market team.
I don't either.
You know, all he's going to do is go down south a little bit in the state. He's going to take over a team that's basically like the Indians, you know, one of the youngest teams in baseball, not a huge, like, superstar yet. You got Ellie De La Cruz there, who has a ability to become a huge superstar. Mm-hmm. But there's no egos on that team, right?
No, like, that's very true.
You know, the biggest star on that team is Terry Francona right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you know, the Reds, they needed a veteran presence, and I think it would, in last season, would have been a great, like, you know, getting someone like J.D. Martinez would have been an awesome addition. Mm-hmm. And I think that really hurt them, not having a veteran leader on that team and having such a young team to push them through the hard times of August and all that, because they really faded. They faded
bad.
Oh,
they did, yeah.
But maybe Terry Francona is going to be that veteran presence. So only time will tell. But, you know, congratulations to Terry Francona. And, you know, he's coming back. You know, that's a lot of heat, man. Regardless of where, it's a lot of work. You know, you're not going to be scrutinized as much as if you were in Boston and that. But, man, he's got a lot of work.
Yeah, and his 24th Major League season coming back, yeah, it is a lot of work. And I hope he could stay healthy. I hope he could do the whole year. But, I mean, he has a tough task ahead. I mean, the NL Central wasn't great this year. So maybe that went into his
decision.
Like, yeah, you know, the Reds had 77 wins. So he's like, maybe we could push that up to 90 and
yeah, I don't necessarily see this like he's going to be there for 10 years. See this like he's going to get the ship going in the right direction. Yeah. He's going to maybe get someone on his staff that he thinks can, you know, take the reins afterwards, and it's maybe like a 2-year thing for him. I don't know exactly what contract he signed yet. It hasn't been made public as of we speak right now. But a great addition for the Reds.
I love it.
Super smart, which, you know, a very exciting team with nothing but upside. Nothing but upside for the Reds. So I wish them nothing but the best, and I'd love to see the Reds in the postseason because, you know, if you watch baseball, Ellie De La Cruz is a very exciting player to watch. Yeah, he's a very exciting player to watch. Getting towards the end of the show here, I want to take some time to talk about something that is, you know, everybody's been seeing it in the news. The stuff that's been going on in the South in the United States, you know, from the hurricane that came through from Florida all the way up through the Carolinas. And I kind of have a personal connection to it because my aunt and uncle live in Asheville. And if you follow the news, and unless you live under a rock, you've seen what's happening down there, and it's not good. It's not good. It's very bad.
Brutal.
I mean, you're talking about, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's biblical kind of crap. It's stuff that, you know, beyond tests the wills of people, it tests the wills of countries. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing in my opinion that there's not more effort. I'll say more of
there's not even like more coverage.
Yeah. Like why isn't the nation rallying around this it's weird.
It's because there's an election in a month.
Yeah. You know, someone step up and do something, but let's put that aside. Let's talk about, the area. So I was just down, my aunt and uncle live in Asheville. They're not down in the lower area. They're up in the mountains, just outside of Asheville, just north in the mountains. And when this happened, all communication went down, and most of the communication is still down. We couldn't get a hold of them. They're elderly. They're getting up there in years, and within like 4 or 5 years ago, they had really bad landslides by their house, and they were gone. They were wiped out of their area. Their house didn't get wiped out, but the roads did in the area, so they couldn't even get back in their house for like 6 months. So automatically my mind's racing, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, like that was nothing compared to what they just dealt with.
Yeah.
So how are they doing? You know, what's the deal? What's going on? And couldn't. So I'm searching all these Facebook pages. I'm getting on all these different group chats and trying to get any sort of answers. And my wife's brother said, "Oh, I know someone in North Carolina. You know, he's always doing stuff, helping people." And I'm like, whatever, dude. You know, like, yeah, I know some people in North Carolina too. Well, flash forward 2 days, and I'm going to say this guy's name. His name is Don. And if I don't know this guy from Adam. I might blow his last name. Don Latulipe. He lives in Murphy, North Carolina, which is like 2 hours from Asheville. And he went to the same high school as me. He graduated with my wife's brother, like 5, 6, 7 years before him. I don't know this guy from a turnip. The guy could come up and kick me in the nuts. If he didn't tell me his name, I wouldn't know him. This guy got in his car and drove to my aunt and uncle's house with gasoline and water.
No way.
Found their house, knocked on their door, made sure they were okay, confirmed they were okay, dropped off water, dropped off enough gas for them to get the hell out of Dodge to drive out of town because you can't get gas down there. There's lines, people are fighting. I mean, it's anarchy. It's crazy. And that's what this guy did. Like, he just, I mean,
that's remarkable.
It is unbelievable. And like, you don't, human nature is you don't really care. Most people don't care until it affects you, right? And to be sitting so far away, and I was just in that area. I was just in Chimney Rock. I was in those stores that got wiped out. I drove through those towns. You know, I don't have an emotional attachment, but I was just there. I saw what it was, and it's gone.
Yeah.
Right? I saw what it was, what it's been, and it's gone. And to sit at home and not know and just wonder, you know, what's going on. And then to have someone like this do that, I mean, it's just, it's beyond words. Like, yeah. I couldn't even begin to repay this guy. How do you repay someone like that who just goes out of their way? And then I look, and my brother-in-law made a post about it on Facebook. And, you know, say what you want about social media, but there are times when social media is great.
Oh, yeah.
Times like this, when people need to connect, when people need to help, when people need to reach out. Now, you're still going to get the scumbags going to be scamming the system and donations and all that. That's just how it works, right? You're never going to stop that. But the comments that were made on the post about this guy just does this stuff. This is what he does.
It's like a slow Tuesday for him.
He just gives and never thinks of himself. And you know what? This world needs more Don LaTulipes. They do. So, Don, man, I don't know you, but I love you.
That's incredible.
And if I ever get to meet you, Don, I'm not big on hugs and shake hugs, but I'm going to give you one hell of a hug because you did a great solid for our family.
I mean, the roller coaster emotions you guys must have been going through, from absolutely hopeless to then the high of this guy that you don't even know other than on Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
I've never met the guy. Never met him. Never. I wouldn't know anything about him. And you know, and the best part about this is my aunt and uncle were running low on water because this is like, they're not out of their house every day.
Right,
they're not down in town every day. You know, my uncle's over 80. My aunt's right around 80. Yeah. Like, you just don't.
Make weekly trips.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is, no one's planned for this. So they got water, which they are running out of. There's no running water down there. There won't be running water in that area for months. The sanitation system's a mess. I mean, you just read for days on that area of the country is going to be an absolute mess for the next decade, at least. But he brought him gasoline, too, because if you want to leave, like they have a house in Tucson, Arizona, they're taking off and they're leaving, right? But they wouldn't even be able to get there because is my 82-year-old uncle going to stand in line for gas for 4 hours? No, but now they're going to be able to get the hell out of there and to where a spot where they can get gas and it's not lines. And it's just, talk about a weight of off your shoulders and a weight off of their shoulders and less things to worry about and just a great human nature story, which you're going to hear zillions more of those stories coming out of that area. So hats off to Don LaTulipe and all the Don LaTulipes around the country
doing great stuff
down there. And you know what? I don't say this a lot, but I pray for you guys down there. It is a rough situation. Yeah. I wish you nothing but the best.
Have you been able to talk to your aunt?
Yeah, I talked to them. They had very minimal damage to their house. Surprisingly, no mudslides. They had a couple of trees that fell, which didn't go through the roof or anything. So they got off very good. Very easy. I mean, the hardest thing they're going to have to do is get out of town and then get back in. You know, and they're lucky they have a place to go to. I mean, granted, it's 1,900 miles away. But they do have a place to go to. Right. I mean, and you're talking about an area where people don't have anything to go to.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't even have a foundation to go to of their house. So, you know, hopefully these people get some respite and they get some, you know, more help than what they're getting now. Because I couldn't even imagine. I mean, we were out of power for 3 days up here and we're bitching up a storm. You know, and not too long ago, we dealt with Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Irene and the October snowstorm knocking out power for 12, 13 days, 2 weeks for some. And after 3 days, people are losing their minds and gas stations. I can't even imagine if you're not even going to be able to use your bathroom for the next 5 months. I mean, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
I mean, not everybody has the luxury to do that. So best of luck to everybody in that region. And I really am pulling for everybody. It just turns my stomach. It turns my stomach. So, I mean, I hate to leave everyone on a sad note, but there is a positive note because good is being done in this world. And hopefully more good comes when we speak next time because we will look back at the division series and see how those went. Hopefully the Yankees win and maybe hopefully our predictions pan out because we try to be right as much as possible and act like we know what we're talking about here on the show. We do watch a lot of baseball, but man, if anyone's been watching, baseball is a funny thing and it can change in an instant.
Unpredictable.
It can change in an instant. So keep watching, keep listening. This has been Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 171.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.